for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irving. And remember that Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. To learn more about PACS, Inc., for all my new listeners and returning listeners, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. On the front page, you will see something that say Amazon Smile. That Amazon Smile, what that is a program that when you buy things through the Amazon Smile program, a small percentage of your donation goes to organizations, like nonprofit organizations, to help as far as donations and funding. And so all you need to do is select PACS, Inc. as the organization that you want your donation to go to. And every time you buy something on Amazon, you'll be supporting PACS, Inc. And in turn, in supporting PACS, Inc., you're supporting the black community. Hallelujah. Somebody done blessed you. And remember, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, my co-host Patrick Irving, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September, and all of the wonderful podcasts that we got. And also, man, y'all remember that the month of August is our Mental Health Awareness Month, so we'll be dedicating our podcast to the mental health of the black community. Pat, tell them about that Freedom Train app.
Yep, we got app. And you should go and get the app from the Apple store.
Hey.
What?
No, I'm just ad-libbing.
Okay. Now I gotta start all back over. Hold up.
Yep. Okay. Hold on. Let me just say it again. Pat, tell about the app.
Yep. We got an app.
Yeah.
And you should go get that.
You hear me?
All of y'all that support us,
right.
It's only on Android.
Android.
For the Freedom Train, you should go get
right.
an app. And if you got
and
an
go
iPhone,
get you an Android. Yeah.
You should go get you an Android because you ain't a real one if you don't have an Android. So get an Android tablet or you ain't got to get an Android phone. Just get some sort of Android mobile device that you could install APKs from the work store from or from the Google Play store from and get the app. And if you hardcore want to stick to iPhones, then you should call Apple up and tell them to stop being dicks about the App Store in iPhone. Because at this point, that's just what it is. And they're getting sued left and right for being dicks. It's certified now. They are in fact dicks. So
dicks
should be supporting
too.
That horrible company.
Little impotent dicks. Yeah,
right.
You impotent dicks.
Right. You should not be supporting that horrible company anyway. I know everybody looks up to Steve Jobs, but he was not a philanthropist.
Hold on, Pat. What we talk about? I might be getting some stock in Apple, so don't tell people that.
It ain't gonna matter, no.
Too late, huh?
people gonna support Apple Apple is gonna have a fan base in America.
Pat,
like,
I hate it, y'all. Don't make my stock go down.
It ain't gonna matter.
Nah, man.
But, yeah, go get the app. Yo, all of the shows are linked up on the app. They get updated automatically. You don't have to check the website or nothing like that unless you want to listen to old shows, like older than the last 25. Then you got to go to the website. But everything's on the website. Everything else is on the app. All of the shows is on the app. When we bring on new shows, the app automatically gets updated. The app is extremely convenient like all apps are. Go get the app.
Right. Because you know you want to be cool. You know you want to be cool in life. So be like me and get the app on the phone. You heard me? Because then everything will be everything. Hey, man. This COVID ain't. The COVID still here, Pat. Why is it still here? Why people in the state of Florida? Why people in the state of Florida won't stay in the house? All my fellow Floridians, what's so hard about staying your ass in the house and out of large crowds? So, check this out, right? No, go ahead. My bad, go ahead.
I'm checking it out.
Now, cut out from the state. So, I don't know if you remember the Juan Dew gas station at the corner of Lake Bradford and Spring Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Across from Pine View, right? So, the dude Juan Dew owned that. So, apparently Saturday night, I don't know if they do this other places, but you know, in the South, especially in Florida, they had the parking lot parties.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, hundreds of people gather in a small parking lot that is not big enough to hold all the people that's in the parking lot. So somebody ended up, first of all, you gathering hundreds of people in the parking lot in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But then somebody ended up getting shot and killed. Well, again, the person at the time was just shot, right? And when the paramedics got there, it was so many people, and the people were so uncooperative, they wasn't allowing the paramedics to come give care to the person who was shot. And so it delayed things. So the person actually died on the way to the hospital. So I'm like, that's like two losses in one night, like spread of corona and the loss of a life. Like, what the hell is wrong with us in Florida?
You know what, though? Now it's been confirmed that when you tell people that they shouldn't do something, even if it's something that they weren't doing anyways, they're not going to listen. They're going to do the exact opposite just because you said so. I have never in my life seen so many people trying to organize so many block parties, street parties, parking lot parties, corner store parties. Like, in my existence, I've never seen so many people trying to set these things up as I have in the last 2 months. This shit is crazy. Everybody want a party now. Like, literally, everybody wants to set up some sort of engagement with hundreds of people. This shit is crazy. I don't know.
I mean, so I guess they should have said, all right, everybody, go Corona ain't real. Go outside and get it. Everybody be like, nah, I don't want to get Corona. They told me to go get Corona. Come on, Corona is fun to get. It makes you stronger. They should have told them that.
They probably should have said that. All right, everybody, go outside and get sick. If they would have just said that, you know what? Maybe Trump had the right idea by telling people it's not that big a deal. You know, it's not real. Just go outside, party. You know, just have fun. Because then people would be in the house watching TV all day anyways, like most of them was doing before.
What?
I don't know, Joe. I do feel bad for Florida because y'all just can't get right state, man. Every time something fucked up, it's Florida or Texas. But y'all,
hey, you from Florida, so you it's still a us. It's still a us in the pack. I don't care how long you stay away. It's gonna always be a us.
It's y'all.
You us.
Even you when I was in Florida, people would be like, "You don't seem like you from here."
People told me all the time, "I don't sound like I'm from Tallahassee. I don't look like I'm from Tallahassee." But guess what? I'm from Tallahassee, Lake Bradford area.
I ain't saying I ain't from there. I'm just saying I'm not up there anymore. I got nothing, bro. Florida ain't been right since the Bush Al Gore shit.
Florida ain't been right since goddamn Spanish lost this shit. Well, now, Florida ain't been right since white people showed up and, back in the 1600s. You know, at least we got slip and slide.
That's true. Take it to the high. Yeah. Triple five. Take it to the high. She got that five.
Yeah. All right. So, what we talking about today, Willie? Hey, so we got a couple. We got like four topics we want to get into. We want to talk about University of Pennsylvania Museum is removing a skull collection, a cranium collection of enslaved African people that they stole for research purposes, like white people be doing. We're gonna talk about Pat's brother Kanye West and his dumbass Harriet Tubman comment. And we really just want to clown Kanye, really, to be honest. We want to talk about this. There's a new black stock exchange coming soon, so we want to talk about that. And, you know, we got a question on the table. Should schools reopen in the middle of this pandemic? So those are our topics. But, and I just want to mention this because this is just something I ran across, I came across as I was getting my show together. I was just scrolling through Twitter, actually. I was just minding my business scrolling through Twitter. And I came across this. It was like black community elder shot to death, execution style, hours after pro-Trump interview. And it kind of threw me because usually when somebody is labeled an elder, pro-Trump is not the words that follow that. I mean, because, Pat, you asked the same question that I had in my head when I first saw it. It's like, are you really an elder if you support white supremacy?
Yeah.
And so let me read this to y'all. All right, so black Trump supporter Bernell Tremell was murdered on Thursday afternoon in broad daylight in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just hours after giving an interview in which he urged his fellow African Americans to vote for President Donald Trump in the November election. Hours later, Tremell, who was known in his community as a respected and peaceful man with no enemies, was gunned down execution style in front of his store. The shooting occurred in front of Tremell's business, which is called Express Publications, and is covered in signs, including most prominently signs saying "Vote Donald Trump 2020" and "Re-elect Trump 2020." The shooting led to the Republican Party of Wisconsin issuing the following statement for the chairman, Andrew Hitt. And as I was reading this earlier, as I got to this point, I started thinking, "Yep, the white folk gonna use this against black folk." So this is what the Republican Party said. Andrew Hitt. It is tragic to learn of the senseless murder of Bernard Tremell, and I offer my sincere condolences to his family and friends because of Tremell's well-known political activism and the possibility that his murder could be politically motivated. I respectfully request that the United States Attorney Matthew Krueger open an investigation into this heinous crime. No Americans should fear for their personal safety because of where they live or their political affiliation. And so, basically, you see the spin that's coming on anyway. I thought it was interesting because as I was reading through it, I saw somebody comment, was like, I wonder what's drug related. And we don't really know until a lot of details come out, but as of right now, it's being spun as a black man who supports Donald Trump got killed by black people who don't like Donald Trump. That's basically the way they spin it. Am I just seeing that, or do you see it like that?
No, that seems like how they gonna spin it. That legit seems like the angle they're gonna take on it. And if I was a Republican, it's a pretty politically advantageous angle to take. I don't know how well it's gonna stick. It's one of those things at this point, you know, you gotta ask, like, do you even need angles still? Because the Democrats are gonna believe what they believe regardless, and the Republicans are gonna believe what they believe regardless. So, you know what I'm saying? But I guess it does provide another talking point for those people on the edges who like to argue and fuss with each other. But my question is still where you had it in the beginning. Like, and I think that's a very valid and valuable question. I know we talk a lot about humans are complex, and I know that it's hard to put things into a box, put people into a box. But the question for me is always going to, like, how can you be for the community but support things that destroy the community? Is there some kind of scale where, you know, one thing weighs heavier than another thing? Or, like, how does that whole thing work out, because if you're a Trump supporter, you ain't my elder.
But I mean, that means
in the community,
right? And I think that's where Mr. Trammell gained. I think that's why they're calling him an elder. And of course, it didn't go fully into detail on what all his community activities were, but I'm just guessing that he got the title of elder because he was active in his community. I'm guessing. So, but apparently, you know, somebody didn't like something either. I'm not going directly associate it with his Trump support, but something happened that caused this man to end up getting gunned down. So,
I mean, it very well may have been the Trump support. It might not have. Like you said, we don't have all of the details. I can't necessarily say. Look, I think there's another interesting point here, though, is this idea that nobody should be threatened because of their beliefs and their views. I think, and this is going to be interesting, and it's going to be a topic that for another day, I'm sure. But I'm not so sure I agree with that anymore. Like, I do think there are certain views that people can have, certain beliefs that people can have that should make them eligible, that should make them meet the requirements for being threatened with bodily harm or loss of life. I do think that that is a thing that needs to happen now.
So if they, and you're saying if they actively support or engage in white supremacist activities, they should be threatened?
Yes. I'm saying that. Like, if you're actively engaged in something that is harmful to my community, think about it like this. You can't have a certain view about, like, Joe, say you were married with kids. Would you allow somebody to have views on your wife and your child and act out those views and have those beliefs and not threaten them?
Well, nah. I mean, at that point, it ain't no threat. I'm going to put these hands on you.
Right.
I ain't talking about draws when I say hands. I'm about to be hands.
So all I'm saying is, as a community, that gets to a certain point where it's like, you can believe what you want to believe, and you can feel however you want to feel. I'm not discounting that. But the moment you get to the point where you're actually actively engaged in an activity or the direct support of an activity that harms me or my family or my community, I am not out of line for putting hands on you. I'm not. But I think there is a level of objectivity to it. It's a lot deeper than that. I don't want nobody to hear this and take it as a soundbite and think, oh, he's advocating for bigotry and stuff. No, it's not that. That's why I said it's probably a deeper discussion for another day. But, and, you know, this whole simplification of this view that people should be entitled to feel, believe, and think and do whatever they want, and you're not, that doesn't give you the right to threaten them or blah, blah. No, I don't know that I agree with that. Some shit that you do gives me the right to threaten you. Some shit that you do gives me the right to put my hands on you. And some shit that you do gives me the right to take you out of here. I'm not saying that being a Trump supporter is one of those things. I'm just saying that there are things out there that do that. That's all.
Yeah, I hear you. I do agree to a degree. Because I do believe people who are actively working against our community should be seen as a threat, should be dealt with as a threat. But I lean to that more toward the actions rather than the words. But the people, the words, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you now. However we talk to you is how we talk to you. But I don't necessarily think that deserves an ass with just the words, but I do think the actions deserve an ass with. Because now you are truly a direct threat to your own community.
I'd agree with that. I think what I'm saying is not necessarily the words.
Yeah, no, I get
that's why I said like direct support. Although even to that, I will say there are certain words that you can say that do grant you eligibility for an ass whooping.
Yeah,
I'm not
saying there are words
that won't get you, that you shouldn't. I don't believe you should kill anybody for what they say out of their mouth.
Like, you know, white people.
Somebody
Yeah, like white, well, like the example, white people using nigger, the nigger word, N word, using with the ER or the A. Either way, the ER get foot in your ass sideways, the A get foot in your ass straight up. I mean, either way. So, that's an example of, you say something, get your ass with, like, if you're non-black and you use the word nigga, whether it's ER or A, because I'm not one of the black people who, well, you said the A, so it's different. Nah, ER or the A, that just determine what direction my foot gonna go in your ass. That's all that matters. But,
is it gonna be backwards or forward, sideways, diagonal? All right, go ahead.
Don't tell me. But you know, there are certain things. But I thought this was pretty interesting that you would have somebody who is considered an elder, but yet this person is gunned down for their vocal support of Trump. So maybe this person wasn't necessarily truly considered an elder.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm thinking about.
I'd agree with that.
So, that's interesting. All right, man. So, the Dream Exchange, right? You read up on it, right? The Dream Exchange. We were talking about it earlier. The Black Stock Exchange.
Oh yeah. The Black Exchange. Yeah.
So there's a Black Stock Exchange coming soon in 2021. And it's called the Dream Exchange. And let me read a little bit of it about you. So, the Dream Exchange, the founder and CEO, Joe Cicala, was a securities lawyer for over 25 years and worked on capital transactions for over 15 years. At that time, he found that small capital transactions were particularly difficult because there was no clear exit in sight for the investor. Early in his legal career, Mr. Cicala learned in depth how stock exchanges work, being the lawyer for the founding members of the company that created the first electronic trading system in the U.S. And I thought this was very interesting as well. This electronic trade exchange went on to become Archipelago. Archipelago merged with the New York Stock Exchange in 2005, creating the electronic exchange infrastructure for the New York Stock Exchange, or New York Stock Exchange ARCA Exchange. Without this electronic infrastructure, the New York Stock Exchange would have had a very difficult time competing in the electronic trading environment. So bravo to him for being, you know, part of that and spearheading that stuff. By conducting years of research after the creation of the New York Stock Exchange, ARCA Exchange, Mr. Cicala discovered that the structure of the U.S. capital markets and current stock exchanges favored only the largest transactions with celebrity companies. This research revealed that prior to Archipelago, the overwhelming majority of IPOs were $50 million and under. By 2004, small capital IPOs had all but disappeared. In addition, after decades of working with minority businesses, he realized as well that minority businesses were nearly absent from all IPO and public company listings. As a result, in 2018, Mr. Cicala founded the Dream Exchange to solve these long-standing market problems by creating a stock exchange to become completely inclusive and expand access to capital markets for companies with great imagination and foresight into the future, as well as make an impact on the lacking diversity in capital markets. So this is basically Mr. Cicala and his business partners got together to create this Dream Exchange and has investing partners, and they're creating this Black Stock Exchange. So the way I'm reading it, it's a black-owned stock exchange that seems like it's going to have components to help build black wealth, but they are a minority. They're looking at it like minority and people of color as well. So, First thoughts when you hear about this, Pat. First thoughts on Black Stock Exchange. First honest thoughts.
My first honest. Well, now I'm really sound awful. Because my first honest thoughts was, oh, shit, here we go again. Another scam artist trying to scam the community.
Oh, man, this ain't the bloom flower, dog. This ain't the Susu bloom flower.
That's my first thought. Because, like, when we talked earlier, like I said, we've seen a lot of people come in to the Black community talking this talk of financial gain and economic growth for the community. Like, we've seen this. And so that was my first thought. I didn't even really want to get too far into it, just because especially over the last 5-10 years, there's just been a lot of people moving in financial markets and real estate and various other places claiming that they were going to do something for the community and just not following through. So that was my honest to goodness first thought was, oh God, not another one. But then just thinking about the concept of Black-owned stock exchange, like, that was something that I kept just thinking about and going back to. And so finally, just the curiosity in that and, well, how would this work? Because that's actually a good idea. I do think it's a good idea. I think it's a brilliant idea. It's an inspired idea. But that's what led me to the, well, how would this actually work, which actually is what led me to go back in and try to find information on it. So that was my first, that was like the first maybe 10-20 minutes of me thinking about this Black exchange. Because honestly, I didn't hear about it until you sent it as a topic, and then it was like, huh. Because I was just been out of the loop. So it was kind of like, huh. No, well, okay, well. Because I actually started to message you back. You sure you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
So that was my first thought. So what about you? What were your first thoughts? What do you think?
First thought was interesting. A Black stock exchange. Honestly, that was it. To be honest, it was interesting, the Black stock exchange. I really didn't get deep into it, to be honest, because I'm changing the way I view a lot of things. So I'm not going to allow myself, I'm not going to allow emotions to get into it like I would normally do in the past as far as how would this affect the Black community. It's because especially as I read the information, it doesn't, because when we think about something for the Black community, in our minds, we think about something that can actually help make changes. That, and changes that we can see. And I don't think that this is something that is going to produce changes that we can see anytime soon, as far as mass changes anytime soon, because a lot of different factors have to go in and Black people have to buy into it as well. So, right. So that's my thought. That also, I want to learn a lot more and actually see a lot more and see how it, like we was talking earlier, how does it compete with the New York Stock Exchange? How does it compete with the New York Stock Exchange? But then also looking at Sakala does understand the New York Stock Exchange. He does understand what it takes to be a stock exchange. He does understand the world of finance. He understands stocks and trading and all that stuff. He does understand it because he worked 25 years into this business. And if everything they said was true, him being part of, or like the one of the leaders in the creating of the online infrastructure, the e-commerce infrastructure for the New York Stock Exchange, then of course, like that shit, he know what he doing. Now, there still is a question of being able to compete with the behemoths that are already out there. So, it's something that is exciting. It's something that is good though, because Black people, we do need our own shit. And our scholars have been telling us for years that we need our own shit. Now, you know, as we was talking earlier, I do get the trepidation that comes with it, especially when, you know, looking at what happened with the Jay Morrisons and the Umar Johnsons and the other people out there who've been asking Black people for money, but then nothing real tangible ever comes from it. So I do get that. I do get the trepidation. I'm not mad at it. But I'm not going to try to act like I'm looking into a crystal ball, and I can just tell you that this ain't going to be for black people, and this going to be this, and this going to be that. I can't tell you that because I don't know this man. I don't know nothing about this man. I don't know about his track record. And we just have to see. We just have to wait and see. So if 15 years pass from now, this is created 15 years pass from now, we still here? Well, hell, we got our answer, right? But I do want to sit back and see, but I'm not going to I don't have a problem side-eyeing, but I'm not going to criticize just yet. Just yet.
Yeah, the conversation we had earlier was basically to sum it up, you know, like, we don't have enough information to criticize. We don't know how he's planning on fixing those deficiencies that he sees in the major stock markets. We don't know how he's planning on encouraging businesses to sign up to be listed. We don't know the business model for how this exchange, this stock market, is going to make money. You know, there's just so much about this thing that we don't know, from the listing requirements to the whether or not it's going to be a public-owned or private-owned. I mean, we know that he's going to have ownership with a group of investors and partners. We don't even know who those people are. So there's just so much that we don't know. But I do think the idea itself is a great idea. But I'd be interested to see how, again, just going back to what I said earlier, I'd be interested in seeing how this stock exchange is going to address some of those deficiencies that he sees in the overall market, because he would have to gain quite a bit of market share in order for him to be able to dictate new ways that IPOs roll out, new ways that the market interacts with small capital traders and participants. There are a lot of questions. But again, on the surface, I do think it's a good idea. I think it's a great idea. Just we don't know how it's going to be executed.
I mean, but, you know, just to be real, I want something tangible and successful to come for the black community within the form of a stock exchange. Like, that would be great for black community to have that, and actually have black companies actually trading on these in the stock exchange and being able to increase the leverage or increase the capital to be able to hire more people and do more things. Because I was reading earlier and it was saying a lot of companies are able to hire a lot more people and boost revenue and boost other things with the money that's coming in from going public, from creating that IPO and putting that there.
Right.
So, right. So black businesses need that. Most black businesses aren't operating at the level that these white businesses are. Yeah. A lot of black businesses are springing up, but they are real, like, small mom-and-pop-sized businesses rather than white people creating these behemoths.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I looked at it, and this was from more than a decade ago, but the numbers don't get updated all that often. But the average black business was making, I want to say, somewhere around $20,000, which is just not a lot of money. Especially not when you see that as like total overall income, when you start taking out expenses and things for that, you know, very quickly you can find yourself breaking even, if not being in the hole, and that definitely doesn't leave a lot of money to pay people on the other end of that. So,
yeah.
Being able to go public with those IPOs and gain money off of it as another way of gaining capital, in addition to still having the traditional angel investors and all of those other sources, preferred stocks and all of those other things, is immense. But it also, we need black people as a whole to get more. This goes back to the economic conversation we were having. We need black people and black businesses as a whole to begin to, like, take finances seriously and take those financial markets seriously. And even to that, a simple thing is understanding the difference between the primary market and the secondary market. So Without getting too deep into all of that, but there's a lot here. I do want it to succeed. I would love to be trading. And this, I don't think this is even going to become what I would love to be trading in, because what I was going to say is I would love to be trading on a black exchange that deals with all black predominantly black companies. I think
for us,
like
though,
a minority thing or something.
Well, yeah, it'll be a minority people of color thing. But there will be black businesses in there, and we know a lot of the top black businesses will have a chance to be there. But for us as consumers and traders and investors, it gives us another stock exchange to invest in, because it ain't like we limited to one. We can invest in whatever exchange we want to invest in, and how many we want to another at one time. So it gives us another exchange, but access to more capital for more businesses. And then think about being able to catch a wave, some of these black businesses in the beginning stages, like take all the information that we know now from stocks and investing and being able to catch a wave. So like the 1919 wave, 1919 wave with Coca-Cola, or like catching the Google wave or that Apple wave or that Amazon wave. So you catch a wave for a black business like that, 10, 15 years down the line, your investment turns to tens of millions.
Yeah, but that goes into, we don't know a lot about the structure, because how this stock exchange is structured is going to have a huge bearing on that. And also, how many black people actually come over to the exchange? How many investors? Because, you know, a stock exchange is a lot like eBay in a lot of senses. It's a secondhand shop. You know what I'm saying? You can only make money if there's somebody willing to buy your secondhand good. And in the case of the stock market, your secondhand good is the stocks themselves. So, you know, if it gets a sizable amount of traders willing to trade, then I think it's going to be a good thing regardless, and it's going to see a lot of growth. The question I have, though, even that is, how is it going to be set up, and are people going to be willing to come over and trade? Because, you know, you can't trade by yourself. You need other people there to buy what you get, what you sell, and you need other people there to so that you can to sell so that you can buy what they sell. So
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I do get it, and that is legitimate concern, but I do think that people would come over, because like I said, it gives another market to trade on.
It does.
And if everything is legit with it and things are growing, people are going to go trade there.
I'm gonna go over and trade. I will say that, like, if it opens up and everything looks legit, I would most definitely be over there trading. I most definitely would.
Yeah, why not? Why not? So, but yeah, man, that's the Dream Exchange. Go check it out. The website is dreamx.com. DREAM. Hold on, let me go to the home. Make sure it's DREAMEX.com, DreamEX.com. We're checking my first ever minority-owned stock exchange information launching in 2021. Really going down in the Mickey side.
IDB.
All right, so our next topic is, should schools reopen in the middle of this COVID pandemic? So, Pat, you a parent. You a parent.
Mm-hmm.
You sending your kids back to school in the middle of the COVID pandemic?
Nope.
Why not?
I don't mean to be disrespectful to parents that's cool with it, but it's stupid. There's no other way to say it. Cool, I let it laugh. Like, up here in Charlotte, right? So up here in Charlotte, right, this is how they're doing it. The kids are going to go to school on alternating weeks, right? So 1 week, one group of kids go to school. The next week, the next group of kids go to school. The bus drivers are going to be required to thoroughly cleanse, basically sanitize the seats, after every pickup or drop off, the students are going to be required to social distance while in the hallways. And the teachers are going to be required to not only social distance, but ensure that the students are social distancing. And they're saying that they at least want all of the students to come to the first week of school so that they get some face-to-face interaction with their teachers and their classmates. And I'm like, first off, are you going to give the bus drivers a raise to be doing all that extra work?
You know how many little black kids going to get suspended and rolled up for not social distancing?
That was the other part. Like, you're talking about kids. Like, especially for elementary and middle school.
Adults can't do it. I'm in Florida. Trust me, I know adults can't do it.
Like, and you're talking about having, like, physical contact is everything to an elementary and middle schooler. And even for a lot of high schoolers, it's everything. You are not going to get these kids around each other and tell them they can't. I be listening to certain friends of mine who have kids who still let their kids go to the pool or go out to the park or go elsewhere. And the whole call, they're basically yelling at their kids, you're too close, come back. And I'm just like, well, that's what kids do. They play. So that's stupid to have them in an enclosed environment, because now you're talking about having them indoors in a building, a closed off building. Who's to say then if a kid has it, doesn't cough up some COVID vapor that gets into the air conditioning system and sprays all over the fucking school? Like, go ahead.
My thought process was, are these kids going to be contained in like a bubble outside of school?
No.
Okay, so you could do all that you want in school. If they ask catch COVID outside of school and come to school, it's a good chance they're going to pass. So how can you ensure outside of school that they are not contracting COVID? You can't.
That's the thing, right? You can't. 100%.
So now, I understand that there are some kids who depend on school for meals and escaping abusive families and other things. I do get that. So I do. I was thinking about if you do have some face-to-face physical school, have some special exceptions. I don't know how you determine who all will meet those special exceptions, but some of those students that you can, if you've already identified, make special exceptions for them. And, you know, you can use the social distancing and things with that. But I don't feel safe with small kids. Like anybody under sixth grade, I just don't feel safe with them at school because they're not going to follow directions. Look, kindergartens running around school. They ain't gonna keep their mask on. Like, man, they gonna be wilding, man. Like, I would the only kids I would really feel comfortable with would be like 12th graders.
Here's the thing, right? The only reason why you would So the people that are talking about, like, their kids eat at school, like, I get that, you know what I'm saying? But that's not relevant right now because in the CARES Act, there was a law passed, or there was a portion of the CARES Act that was focused on making sure that those kids who qualify for free or reduced lunch would still have access to free and reduced lunch during school time. So, and there are places set up to where you can go and get free or reduced lunch for your child. They had them set up all over Charlotte, you know, where parents would come with lines and blah, 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 and they would essentially get a bag lunch for their kid. So that part's been taken care of. Now, the abusive relationship piece, that's serious. And I'm not sure if there's been any thought put into that from a legal standpoint, but I do know that sending these kids into a potentially dangerous situation, that still can't be the answer for getting them out of that dangerous situation. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I wouldn't understand it if that was, you know, that was the thought process. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But everything else, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's stupid.
That's why I say there are a few exceptions, but not many. Not many. And, I know here in Florida, of course, DeSantis following Trump and everything is about money, and they want to get the money back flowing. But I just can't see parents really wanting to put their kids in harm's way. Now, I know here in Tallahassee, I was reading somewhere, they did a poll of like 100 students or something like that, or a couple hundred students, and they were asking students, do they want to go back to school? And 66% of the students said that they actually want to go back to school. Then my immediate thought was, well, see, that's why parents exist. Because, of course, the kids want to go back to school.
Right.
But guess what? It's a pandemic. You want to die? Because you don't have to die to get an education. You really don't have to die to get an education. And school, like right now, the way schools are, just too many damn kids in one place at one time to be able to truly contain this thing.
That's exactly why I say it's stupid. Because it's too many damn kids in one place. You can't possibly make a school safe. You just can't do it.
When we was in school, when we felt like doing what the fuck we wanted to do, that's exactly what we did. And didn't give a damn about the consequences.
Yeah.
So I mean, imagine. Right. So couple that with a pandemic. Man, look it up, man.
There is literally nothing that you can do to make, like, and we go back to again. There's nothing you can do to make a school safe. There's just nothing that you can do. Too many kids. Too many entrances, too many exits, too many windows, too many outside of turning the school into a prison, which we don't want that. And even then, you still can't make it safe because you don't have 24-hour access to the kids. So like you said earlier, if a kid come in with COVID, it's guaranteed that more kids are going to leave out the building with COVID. And so then they were saying, I know up here they're saying, if the kid is suspected of having COVID on school, in school, they'll put the kid in quarantine and monitor the kid. And my thing is,
but what if the kid is asymptomatic?
Right. Or what if the kid just has a cold but doesn't have COVID, and now there's no non-scene making way to do that. So now all of the other kids is looking at it, oh shit, he got that COVID. And he's like,
you still have to maintain confidentiality. You can't have a kid that has COVID and then the way you remove the kid or the way you quarantine the kid is still exposing to letting everybody know this one kid have COVID.
You already still, that, know, that how, still has to you happen. Know how this is going to work, though, Joe. You already know how.
Man. Lawsuits. All I'm going to say, lawsuit.
Nah, because you already know how this is going to work, too. They're going to have something in the paperwork that parents are going to have to sign that says that schools will not be held liable for whatever damages that might be caused physically, psychologically. Because you think if there weren't any liability protections, if schools could be sued for a child catching COVID at a school, they wouldn't be opening the schools to begin with.
Yeah, man.
Imagine what happens if the school opens, and we'll say out of the 1,500 kids that go back, we'll say a particularly large school, three of them catch COVID and die. The school would still potentially lose millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in a lawsuit. I haven't seen it, But I have to believe at this point that there's something in the paperwork somewhere that says that schools can't be held liable. It's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, but if I'm a parent, I ain't signing that shit. Nah, you're going to be held liable, especially if look, y'all the one fighting for kids to come back to school. Because my thing is, as teachers and everybody, if y'all don't want this fight, join the parents and fight. Like, I know there are some organizations. Yeah. Now, okay, I know here in Tallahassee, I've seen, like, this organization. I have a problem with organizations who are trying to fight for communities that they take no time to go into and actually get to know. Like, they don't do anything in the communities, but when bigger problems come, and then is a part of that bigger problem, they want to go in and do these things and protest and speak for the community. And it's like, well, no, like, don't none of y'all got kids, and none of y'all part of these communities. Like, we don't know none of y'all. We don't know none of y'all. Why don't we know any of you all? How you going to fight for a community of people that you don't know? Now, we're not saying you can't be an ally, but we're like, dang, be an ally. Like, can we actually be on the same page? Can we actually know you? And then make sure that you are talking to the parents in the community so you're not communicating your ideas or your interpretation of what's going on, but the actual parents who are going to be affected by this. So now, with that being said, I don't have a problem with organizations that are of the community and represent the community and people, of the community represent the community, those people fighting and voicing those things. I don't have a problem with that. But I'm just saying it needs to be still, anything needs to be connected to the people and really about the people, not just about grandstanding, trying to look good while the people still suffering.
I am with it. I'm with it. I mean, I think that the community, I do think teachers, like, they went on strike for pay. They need to now go on strike for health, because that's another concern. Like, who's looking out for the health of the? If I'm a teacher, ain't no way in hell I'm going into a classroom full of these students. I'm talking about teaching. You kiss both sides of my dick and all four corners of my balls and the inside of my asshole. Like, it's not happening. But then on top of that, you know, like, not even besides the health ramifications for me, how can I teach in this environment? I can barely teach as it is with all of the bullshit I got to deal with. Now I got to play hygiene checker, safety guard, blah, blah, security officer, and a distance inspector in addition to teaching. Like, there's barely any teaching going on in the classroom to begin with everything the teachers got to deal with. And on top of that, now I got to violate social distancing rules myself to make sure that kids are socially distancing who are fighting me at every turn to not social distance. To the point where, for a lot of these kids, it's probably going to become a game. Like, go ahead, Joe.
Now, one thing that kind of made me shout out some of the parents was, the parents was like, my child needs to go back to school in the middle of this COVID pandemic because I'm a horrible teacher. Cool, everybody not good at teaching, cool. But you can't tell me virtual opportunities ain't available. Can't tell me that co-ops and things. Like, just as a parent, you got to go search. There are alternatives to actually sending your child in. Like, right now, there are a whole lot of virtual opportunities. Hell, if they're giving virtual options here in Leon County, I know they're giving virtual options other places.
Yeah, I mean, one of the people we
interviewed, and then, like,
and myself, like, we have a virtual option for parents all over the fucking world. Like, so, but go ahead. I'm
what's
sorry.
The name of it? What's ahead. The name of it? What? Now I'm saying, what's the name of it?
Footprints for Literacy. Go to www.homeschoolingfootprints.com.
I one of my coworkers, what was funny, like we were having a conversation in the office, and I was just like, I just turned around, I was like, "If are teachers still getting paid to teach right now?" Because I think she was complaining about like not really getting help from the teachers. And I was just like, "Are they still getting paid right now?" She was like, "Yeah." And I just kind of gave that look like, well, shit, they need to do their fucking job. So she like immediately got on the phone and called the teacher, called the school and talked to the people in the school. And the teachers was like, "Well, now I want more help for my daughter. I want more. I want this for my child. I want that for my child because my child needs this extra help." So next thing you know, in the next couple of days, they got it set up with certain times of the day, or yeah, certain time every day, 5 days a week, just like a school. The teacher will have one-on-one virtual with that student. But that's just that happened with her and her child because she actually reached out. She actually took action. Like you got to fight for your child.
Yeah, I get that, and I agree with it. On the other hand, I do feel where the teachers are coming from, because this virtual shit, like, take it from me, somebody who, you know, we were doing the in-person thing for a period of years, and now we're doing the virtual thing. The virtual thing is a lot more time-consuming. Now, I think a lot of teachers shot themselves in the foot by giving out all this work, thinking that, you know, well, they ain't in class and they got to do this, so we just going to give them a whole bunch of work, not realizing that the more work you give a student, the more work you give it yourself. And so I do think there was a bit of a steep learning curve. Teachers weren't prepared for it. And also understanding that a lot of the help that students get in the actual classroom, I think a lot of teachers are realizing now it's not actually coming from the teachers, it's coming from your peers. You know, you ask your friend for help. You don't really ask the teacher for help. Hey, man, you know how to do this shit? Yeah, man, can you explain this shit to me? Because I don't know what the fuck he talking about up there. Like, that was a regular part of my high school experience. So I think that's also been a realization that students help each other a lot more than what was realized. But so I agree, and I love the fact that she was able to get help for her daughter, and I do think parents need to be more vocal about trying to get help. On the other end, if you're a parent who's saying that I'm not a good teacher for my child, I'm looking you right in your face. You shouldn't be a fucking parent. That's the whole thing with parenting is teaching. Like, that's basically what a parent is, a guide and a teacher. If you are a parent and you can't teach your child, you are a piss-poor parent. Yes, I said it, and I stand 100% behind it. Now, when I say teach, and people get caught up, you don't have to stand in front of a white chalkboard and outline everything for your kid. That's like, there are more ways to teach than just that. So do you have to be creative in figuring out how to impart certain things to your kid? Yeah. But don't cop out and say that I'm not a teacher. You got a kid. Yes, you are. Well, whether you want to be or not.
Right. But now, I'm with you on that. Now, on the teacher angle, though, I hear the teachers, and things have changed, but what the teachers have to realize for everybody else, because the teachers aren't the only profession that has to adjust. You get that.
Right.
But this is the new now. This is it. This is the new now, and you have to adjust. Like, you have to. And now, I do think parents and teachers and that adjustment need to come together and work together to help that adjustment and help that transition be more successful and smooth. People have to come together and work together. So parents discuss, talking about their things, students talking about things, teachers talking about their things, and they're coming up with the best options for everybody. Each school, each jurisdiction, everything going to be different, but people doing what's best for them to make sure that they could be successful. Communication is a motherfucker, man.
It is.
If people put their egos to the side and actually get to the point to say, all right, look, this shit ain't working right now. I don't know what I'm doing, or this shit just ain't working. I know a little bit or whatever. I need some help. Can we all come together and help each other? I do feel that a lot can change. So,
No, I agree. I do think there needs to be better communication between parents and teachers, and I think there needs to be more understanding on both ends, because teachers are frustrated with parents, and parents are frustrated with teachers. You know, my sister is a teacher and a parent, and she's expressed not only displeasure with the teachers of her children, but also displeasure with her students, you know, just for the simple fact that there isn't a lot of communication, and everybody feels like their time is pulled. Parents feel like, well, shit, why the fuck do I got to be a teacher? I don't get paid to do this shit, and this is all of these extra hours out of my day trying to help my kid get through this work. I don't know what the fuck this work is. And then you got, you know, teachers who are like, I got 30 students, and all 30 of them want me to spend an hour of one-on-one time with them every single day. It's not enough time in the day for all of that. So I get it. I get it on both ends. And that's why, again, I go, like, what you just said to me is wonderful. That's the answer. Better communication needs to be had. But in order to get there, both sides got to be willing to understand where the other people is coming from. I do feel like teachers launched the initial salvo when they sent all these big-ass I saw some of them work packets. Some of the kids here were getting home from school. That shit was ridiculous. Like, I don't know what these teachers were thinking about when they put these packets together, but that shit was stupid. It was just retarded how much work they were giving these kids. And now they're having to deal with the consequences of that. You gave out all this fucking work, and now all of the students, all 30 of your students, and if you in high school, feel bad for you because you got 30 times 6, all of them students is like, yo, I need help. You did that. Because they wouldn't have been doing all of that work if they was in school. I know they wouldn't. I used to pay attention to my kids' work assignments. They would be fortunate if they got 10 to 15 assignments in a 9-week period. You just sent home a packet with like 30 assignments in it.
Yeah.
So I don't feel bad for teachers on that tip. And they're getting paid. Like you said, they are still getting paid. So
you're getting paid through your job, after your job.
Right.
But once again, parents and teachers need to come meet in the middle to get the best results for the kids. If not, then they both need to sit their asses down for that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right, so move on to the next topic. Pat, what the fuck wrong with your homeboy Kanye, man?
He married a Kardashian.
But right now, the Kardashian seems like she got more sense than him. And that's been like that for a little minute, for the last couple of years. Remember we talked, the Kardashian is actually doing more for the black community than Kanye is.
Well, yeah, they still are. You're right. But
yeah, they still are. And that's sad.
You got to remember, too, though, when you mess with a Kardashian, the Kardashian don't go crazy. You go crazy.
True. That is true. And Kanye, he been Kardashian. That is true. Yeah.
Right.
He crazy as fuck. But no, this latest thing, you know, we didn't talk about it last week because we interviewed Ms. Debbie Ward Erickson. Shout out to her, great interview, talking about the world of sex and sexuality. But, you know, Kanye's statement of Harriet Tubman didn't free the slaves. She just took them to go work. Oh, appreciate that. Yeah, we got to have her back to get more into some semen retention and other sex stuff, but.
But I interrupted you. I just wanted to say that. But what you were saying, what Kanye West said again for the people that didn't hear?
Yeah, Harriet Tubman didn't really free the slaves. She just took them north to work for other white people or be oppressed by other white people. And, you know, this is also around the time, like always, when he about to drop something. He's supposed to be dropping an album or something. So, yeah, that boy needed his ass whooped at this point. But shit, it's marketing. It's his failed attempt at marketing thing because, you know, he got his little weak ass presidential campaign up there. But to be saying things like this, it's just highly disrespectful, though. A lot of stuff that he's saying, even though he seems like he's going for the shot factor, but at this point, black people just got to be like, come on, bro. Come on, bro. Like, it's one thing for you to want to get your stuff out. There was another thing for you to be doing this dumb shit and making yourself look good. And then the audacity of Negroes to try to support what he's saying and try to confirm or try to speak for him and say, well, this is what he really meant. Nah, dog, you can't speak for that man. You can't say what that man really meant without talking to that man. That's all somebody on the post on Twitter was like, I'm not really sure, but I believe this is what he meant. No, you was right in the beginning. You're not sure, so shut the fuck up. But that what do you know of any historical information to back any of that shit up? Because I don't. I'm just asking because maybe you might know.
Nah, if I twist my head to the side and squint my eyes, I can see what he might be talking about. And what he might be talking about is the fact that, you know, so the slaves that came off the plantation and went through the Underground Railroad to freedom, and I don't want to specifically say her because that does discount the work of all of the other people on the railroad, and I don't feel like she would be insulted by that at all. But, you know, those former slaves, now freed people, had to get jobs. And often they got jobs working with white people, being paid by white people. But to equate slavery to paid labor is just a Kanyeism at this point. Like, that's so stupid that it doesn't even, like, it's an insult to stupid people. It's a Kanyeism. That's what I'm just calling from now on. When somebody says or does something that's just so dumb that it's beyond stupid, I'm going to just call it a Kanyeism. And the fact of the matter is, this is the truth for me. Kanye's music is not good enough to justify his behavior. Hasn't been for a decade or more. And that's if you want to say it ever was good enough to justify his behavior. I'm one of them people that I felt like College Dropout was a great album, wonderful album. And then from there, they just started going downhill, in my opinion. But at no point in time did I ever hear a Kanye West album and was like, oh, yeah, this definitely justifies the bullshit.
I mean, Kanye, when people have a top five, his name is never mentioned.
And it should have been.
He's not as good of a rapper as he think he is. He can rap. He's not as good of a rapper as he think he is. As far as producing, I don't know what he's done production-wise that was actually truly revolutionary. I think he's one of the handful of great producers that have come in the last 20 years. I do believe that, with the Timberlands and the Pharrells and the Just Blazes and the Swiss Beats and the other cats like that who just came out the box and just did their thing and like this newer wave or the wave of upcoming age group of us with producers behind, you know, the group behind the DJ Premier's now. But, yeah, you're right. He hasn't done anything to justify his speaking. And he keep telling you all that he don't study. He just saying shit that he feel that should be right. But it's like, Kanye is an idiot, though. And I don't understand why people don't realize that. Kanye is a self-centered idiot, mama boy idiot. And just like, you know, I was listening to The Breakfast Club on my way to work, and they're talking about he had a lot of Twitter rants going off on his wife and all types of other stuff. Like, this cat is, like, breaking down again, like, going crazy again, doing all this stuff. Of course, he was supposed to drop an album, I think it was, the 24th or something, and the album event didn't come out or something like that. But, yeah, I'm not with the canceling stuff, but people just, you know, at some point you just got to stop fucking with people, man. Like, at some point, Kanye had reached that point that we're just, you know what, we don't fuck with you because we can't fuck with you because you're a dumbass and you're a detriment to this community because you're willing to throw everybody under the bus for your own personal gain and we can't fuck with you.
No, I mean, I'm not
That's
with
what
the canceling. I'm not with the canceling thing either. Kanye West should have been checked a decade ago. If we're being totally
honest. Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, he like should've. This ain't like he and Kanye West is another one of those walking contradictions. And I know that human beings are complex and we're all a contradiction to some extent. But Kanye West is beyond what is should be acceptable by human standards.
So yeah.
I don't fucking rock with none of this shit. Like, fuck Kanye West. At this point, Kanye West is a certified sample. Put a stamp on him. It's done. Like,
he'll definitely part of the International Fuckboy Coalition.
Yeah. Like, he might be a president. So
he might be.
And this whole thing with him, honestly, I still don't even know why Kim Kardashian is famous at this point. But she is. So I really don't care about Kim Kardashian. And to be honest, I'm trying my best not to care about Kanye West as well. But a lot of the black folk that I talk to, they love this dude for some reason. And even as far as him being a producer,
yeah.
He hasn't done anything revolutionary. He wasn't the first person to sample. People forget we was clowning Puffy for sampling goddamn 10 years before Kanye West was even a thing. Like, before we even knew who Kanye West was,
soul
we
samples.
Was clowning Puffy.
Yeah. Yeah, people have been using the sped up soul samples.
Right.
So, like, I mean, he put his own little flavor on it.
Yeah.
He put his own little flavor on it, but people have been doing the sped up soul samples. No, he did. He didn't. He did sped up soul samples his own way. But people have been doing that.
I mean, even to the point that you can't even, like, everything Kanye West has done in music has been done before. Now, he was a breath of fresh air when he kicked in the door. He was that. And I'm not taking nothing away from that album. That first album was definitely everything that we needed from mainstream hip-hop at the time. But since then, and I listen, I still have that album. I listen to it regularly. It was a great album for what it was at the time. It's still a great album now, not taking nothing away from it. But when you compare it objectively to other albums, there ain't nothing revolutionary about that album either. It was just a breath of fresh air when it came out. So, and I know, like, I get accused of being a Kanye West hater all the time. I'm not mad at the man for getting his paper. Get your paper, do your thing. I ain't mad at that, but that don't mean I gotta like it. And that don't mean I gotta agree with you. Fuck Kanye West, man. This whole, like, I don't, that, he should have been canceled for black people the moment he said slavery was a choice.
Yeah. Hey, now, what was funny is I saw a meme that was going around that George Bush was like, Kanye West don't care about black people. And I was like, that was hilarious, because it's true.
If I was George Bush, I would legit get on TV and say that.
I would do it. I would do it if I was George Bush. I would get on TV and I would say, Kanye West, and I'd get Michael Myers to look at me like that, like he looked like Kanye. I would do it.
Kanye West does not care about black people.
He doesn't.
And I know I'm going to catch a lot of
fun. He only cares about himself.
But, say it
again.
This is crazy. Nah, I was just continuing the thought of being George Bush on TV. But this is crazy. This is Kanye West.
But it's like,
I can't even say he lost his mind, but this is crazy.
There'll be some bougie, bootleg black folk who have a problem with it, who will probably do that. But the truth of the matter is, Kanye West don't care about black people. How is black America better because of Kanye? Kanye been out since the early 2000s, since like 2002. Dropped first album like 2002. It's 2020 right now. How has black America improved and gotten better since 2002 when Kanye came out? What has changed? What has improved due to Kanye? I'll wait.
Yeah, you're going to be waiting a long time.
Right. So that's just the thing with that, though, you know. But just as, you know, historian and people understand the importance of making sure our figures are seen in their true light, especially if it's great light to our kids, to our youth, because you can't have some fuckboy like Kanye saying something like that. And we know that a lot of these people don't read and how they take celebrities' words. So they might be thinking, well, they ain't had people saying all the things about Harriet Tubman. She really didn't help the slaves. But no, she actually did, because can't prove anything Kanye said. There's no information. Like, they even had, you have to have a descendant of Harriet Tubman come out and make a statement. Right? Because people understand the power and the reach of celebrity word. Mm-hmm. And when you got a fuck boy like this and something like that, man, you got to have all the historians come out and be like, nah, bro, you lying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be, that idea has to be put down thoroughly and completely by all of the people with any sort of way, especially, like, this is where we get into the need for historians and even, you know, like, the need for celebrity historians, the need for people who know this shit with a voice, because you're 100% right, like, Kanye West could do an immense amount of damage with his foolishness. And that's the upsetting part about the celebrities we have nowadays, is the lack of understanding or appreciation that they seem to have for those people who would just believe everything they say just because they said it. And the responsibility they have to like, watch what they say.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. But once again, you know, for those out there who we know would follow that, you know, you just got to make sure you get in front of that stuff and let people know, especially as historians, hey, man, that's not true. That's not true at all. Kanye West don't know what he's talking about. Kanye West don't even read. Brother don't even read. Where did he get that from?
He can't read. I'm convinced that this dude don't read. Read what? Not books.
Yeah.
I don't know, Joe.
He read. Yeah, but I'm just, you know, don't believe what that fuck was shit. Like, don't believe that dumb shit. Kanye West don't know what the hell he's talking about. That's all I got to say about that.
Joe. He know more than y'all.
Yeah, you're right. That's right. You know. Yeah. Yeah. You better hope his gold digger son will come true. Damn. 18 years.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Hey. I ain't saying she a gold digger. She ain't fucking with no broke.
Well, half the song and already come true, though, ain't it?
Okay. I know, that's what I'm saying.
So, you know, when he get on, he leave your ass for a white girl. Yeah.
Get down, girl. Go ahead, get down.
Get down.
So,
yeah.
So our last topic is white people. White people get on some other stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And not like, the racist, white supremacist, racist white people, and some other stuff. So, University of Pennsylvania Museum, they are set to remove a skull collection of enslaved people that they collected over the years as far as for doing this specific research. So, you know how, like, when you watch a movie and, like, you have this insane psychotic scientist who is unethically, like, detaining people and, like, doing experiments on them, then you got to go in and save people from them. Like, this is basically what happened with Penn. Like, so they took the remains of dead slaves. I think they said 53 of the, I think it was, like, 60-some, but 53 of the 60-some were from Cuba, and the rest were, like, African-Americans. But they collected the skulls over time, was conducting research on them, and then, now, since all this Black Lives Matter stuff is coming out, then you have an organization called the FPF, PFP, the Police Free Pen, and they are demanding the school-wide reforms and collections, removal, and repatriation of the skulls. So they want the skulls to be sent back, given back to either their homes where they actually come from, or black groups who understand the spiritual connection with death and ancestors and stuff, to take it in, bury them and things. Now, one thing I did find that was kind of, I ain't gonna lie, I chuckled at that as I was reading the article. When the students were saying that they were experiencing trauma from seeing the skulls on display. Yeah, I was just sitting there like, y'all, you are experiencing trauma from seeing the skulls on display. Like, I mean, you know, use your angles. Use all your angles. Use them. But I just found that, you know, I chuckled. I ain't gonna lie, I chuckled. But I'm not mad at you for using your angles, though, so I get it. You know, wink, wink. But I did find that funny. But
that's a chuckle.
When you hear something like this, yeah. But these boys housing skulls. Yeah, they say 53 of the crania of enslaved individuals from Havana, Cuba, and two. So they got 55 skulls. And two of them from the United States, 53 from Canada, from Cuba. And the person who collected this was Samuel George Morton, a 19th century Philadelphia-born University of Penn educated physician who collected hundreds of skulls, including those of enslaved Africans, Native Americans, and Cubans, to try to reinforce his white supremacist pseudoscientific theory that the brains of some races are larger than others. So they've been holding these skull collection for the longest, and now, since they have been forced by the student coalition and some outside forces that they came with, now they are, right now, they aren't giving the skulls. They just took skulls off of display, but you can still go see them by request. But they're off display, and they're still in the possession of the University of Penn Museum. Hey, man, Dr. Clark told us to study everything, man. Study everything. And just looking at this, it just show you, man, where they at. So, hey, man, we got skull collections, cuz.
Yeah.
You know, we don't just take money. No, we take mummies, we take skulls, we take sarcophaguses. No, we take everything.
Sarcophaguses.
If it's in the tomb, we take it.
Sarcophaguses. People are weird, especially white ones. I don't. To be honest,
it's anthropology. No, it's like Indiana Jones.
Apparently, shit. Real talk. Nah, but I mean, you know, you ask how I feel about this or what do I think about this, and honestly, I don't. This is one of them things where, like, for me, I'm almost surprised when there's a white school out there that doesn't have something atrocious in the basement. Like, so, and it's not to say that I'm always on the lookout for bad things, but, like, really, when you've read through the history and read through the things that we've read through and come across the things that we've come across.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
In the basement.
Well, that's why I was, you know, that's one of the reasons why I was like a chuckle when the students, like, they are experiencing trauma from seeing the skulls. It's like, I'm not mad at the angle. Once again, I'm not mad at the angle. But I'm sure our ancestors be like, y'all don't understand what trauma truly is.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. You can't.
So work the hell out of that angle. Work that shit.
Yeah, I'm definitely not mad at that. I mean, you know, I agree with you on that. Work your angle, baby. That's, you know, that's the angle you feel like you need to work. Work it. Do your thing. Do your thugism. But I'm not going with you. You know, I feel like I'm not going to say it's not worth the energy, because it is significant. I'm not even saying it's not significant. I'm just saying it doesn't move the needle for me. You know what I'm saying? I guess.
I found it interesting, though, and it moved the needle for me because of a lot of the research that I've been doing lately on the origins of racism for this video that I'm putting together, and just looking and just thinking about how I think it was Blumenbach. We used like cranial theories and things to try to like this. What's the guy's name? Samuel George Morton, using cranium sizes and brain sizes and things to try to prove his theory that black people or other people who were not white were inferior to white people. So that's why it moved me for me, because it just took me back there. And then it's just like, hey, black people are inferior to white people. And you want to know how? Look at these scars that's on display. Because Morton collected these scars to say that white people are superior to black people. And it's just like, you know, just put that in people's face. So, you know, anytime it's disrupting white supremacy stuff, I'm down for it. So.
Yeah, I get that, and I guess that's one of them things where I have to remind myself that everybody hasn't been exposed to what I've been exposed to. So, for me, knowing about the whole brain size comparison and look at the Negro skull, it's smaller, it has a smaller brain cavity, blah, 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 therefore their brains are smaller, therefore they're stupider. Like, all of that shit for me was just, I understand where it could be traumatizing, but on the other end, for me, it's just kind of like.
I'm going to be honest. I don't see where it could be traumatizing, and it may be me being ignorant, and I will admit that, but I don't see where it would be traumatizing. And I'm not saying I'm right. So if somebody listens to this and be like, you sound stupid, I might, but I just don't see how it can be traumatized.
I'm being generous. Emotionally, I don't get it. Logically, I get it, but emotionally, it makes no sense to me. So, in this situation, I couldn't emotionally put myself in the space to where seeing those skulls would be traumatizing. Unless, like, I found out, like, this was the skull of, like, my great-great-grandpa or something like that, in which case, you know, I would be like, oh. But even to that, even with me thinking about it, I still don't know that I would be, like, emotionally traumatized so much as it would be, like, for me personally, it would be a reaction because I would feel like I'm expected to react for whatever that means. But I don't know. I'm looking at all of this, and I'm just like, of course. Now, what I don't understand, and this is, I guess, where you get into the spiritual angle of things, and I'm not the most spiritual person in the world, is the need to, like, for me, it would just be like, hey, if you're going to turn them over to somebody, turn them over to the family and let the family do what they will with.
Yeah. Well, see, I think the thing is, that was one of the options to see if they can trace back to who are the relatives of this. If not, if you can't find the relatives, and I don't know how much work they're going to really put into it.
Right.
If you can't find the relatives, then the closest thing you can do is some black groups of people who understand the spiritual aspect and they can do it. It's right. Let's do it. So.
But I'm definitely not, like, to me, that because, like, to me, and again, I'm not the most spiritual person in the world, but you playing an interesting game when you try to play that game of the spirituality game. Because if you can't trace who these bones belong to, the family to give it to them, who's to say that you're going to be performing a ritual that they would have wanted performed on them, or that their family would have wanted performed on them. So this belief, and that's why I say you get into dangerous waters, because if you believe in that kind of stuff, then by extension you will believe in the possibility of desecrating or tainting somebody's resting place by having them be anointed or ritualized by the wrong ritual, the wrong deities. So,
right, because you're assuming.
Right. It becomes dangerous all around the board to me if you can't find the family of the people after doing legitimate work, then find a nice, responsible, humane way to bury the bones somewhere, a graveyard with a headstone, and bury the bones, and just let that be that. You know what I'm saying? But the whole find an African blah, 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 to do blah, 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 like that, to me, that's, I could be, like you said earlier, you could sound real ignorant. I could sound real ignorant right now. But to me, that seems like a bad idea. I know me personally, if I were to pass on, there are some religious exercises that would piss me off. And if I had the ability to speak from the next realm and to let you know that I was pissed off, you would get a strong wake-up call one night for doing certain things to my remains. Stick me in a hole,
yeah,
or cremate me, and let that be that. And even with cremation, you still running the, like, cremate me. Some people, that's a spiritual violation to cremate them. Don't cremate me, motherfucker.
Yeah,
it gets dangerous, you know what I'm saying?
But it's, you know, it's white people who've done wrong and doing more wrong to try to fix their wrong.
Oh, so this was white people that was like, find the African, blah, blah, blah.
Well, because it's the University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, I missed that altogether.
Well, my bad. Not the University of Pennsylvania saying that, but, oh, my bad, white people weren't saying that. The PFP group was saying that.
Right. And that's a black group.
So that's not the white people. So I correct myself. That wasn't the white people saying that. That was, that was the group. Now, I don't know what the demographics are all of the group of this PFP group. So I don't know. So it says it's student led. So I'm guessing some white people are in it.
Yeah, whoever they advisors are, or whatever, need to like let them know, hey, bro, that's not the best way to handle a situation when you don't know whose bones these are or what they believed in. That's still a form of desecration. You know what I'm saying? So, but other than that, like, I don't, like I said earlier, I half expect every campus I go on to have bones on the campus somewhere of black people that built the, especially if it's a PWI, especially if it's a large PWI like Penn State. I expect bones in, I expect skeletons in the closet. I expect it.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Like, how you think they got to where they are doing stuff like that?
But I do think it's interesting, especially when you add in that tidbit about what they want to do with the bones, because I think, especially for you, because I know you study religious spirituality and religion pretty heavily, and so like, that would be an interesting discussion for me to even listen to with, like, between you and other people that are a lot more spiritual than myself, to, you know, like, how would you guys handle this situation and all of this spiritual knowledge that you have? Is it cool to just assume, or is that really, like, bad to assume? Like, I think that would be a really interesting conversation. That could lead even to the differences in the different spiritualities present across the diaspora, something else that doesn't seem to be acknowledged very often. So I think that part is very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to, like, when you come in and you already desecrate things, like, you can't just try to make it right. just by doing things that you think is right. Like, you have to understand cultural and spiritual implications and everything that goes into it, because, you know, that matters. But, you know, when you used to fucking up even more, don't seem so bad, do it? yeah, man, but that, you know, I like that topic because I just thought, like, what the hell, man? When I first saw it, what the hell? White people out there, white people in the game. White supremacists, just white people in the game. But universe of the pen got skulls, got a collection of skulls from dead people that all were collected. Samuel George Morton collected to try to prove that white people were superior and blacks were inferior. So, Samuel George Morton, we shit on your grave. How about that? Yeah, man. So, yeah, man, that's our show today, man. It's that Freedom Train Podcast series. Heard me? Hey, remember, you can advertise your business here on the Freedom Train Podcast series. We have favorable packages. And remember, your advertisements will be heard by at least 250,000 people. 250,000? Yep, 250,000 people. So all you got to do is visit www.freedomtrainradio.com and click on that sponsor tab. Or just email thankyou@freedomtrainradio.com for more information, man. And we got flyers going through social media and everything. You can advertise your business for a fair price, and you can get the maximum return on your interest really going down in the South. Remember, go to our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com, or the Google Play Store to download our Freedom Train Network app. That way you'll get all of the podcasts as soon as they drop. Anything got coming up, Pat?
Nah, but
anything you got coming up people need to know about?
Well, not right now, but you can definitely still go to Amazon. Make sure you use the smile link. Cop the book, The Chasm, The Seemingly Growing Divide Between Black Men and Black Women. That is up, and it is for sale for those of you that already bought it. I know some of you bought it. It got a little check from Amazon. But beyond that, make sure that you are leaving reviews on the book. It looked naked in the review area. I ain't got no review. I think I got one. But I need more, because I know more than one person bought the damn book. So go buy the book and go leave a review and do the same thing to my homeboy co-host Joe Ward. Go buy all three of his books, all three of them, leave a review.
On soldiersone.com. On soldiersone.com. Buy the book. This Friday at 8 p.m. on my YouTube channel, I'm having a conversation with Baba Samuel Oluseigun about the conversation is titled Kujichaku Leo Mentality. And what it is it's like an oral tradition set that he put together where he's using the art of oral tradition to tell different stories that go into the art and going to the mindset and the spirit of self-determination, because Kujichaku Leo in Kwanzaa is self-determination. So telling stories that go into the realm of self-determination. So Kujichaku Leo mentality is happening, and we're also talking about the history and importance of the oral tradition as well. So 8 p.m. on my Own Shoulders Giants YouTube channel, youtube.com/OwnTheShouldersOne. Check me out. Subscribe to my own show. Subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. Support your homeboy and support me on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. And really going down. So support Lessons from the Screen on Patreon at patreon.com/LFTS. And support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/TheFix. Got any parting shots, Pat?
That's all.
Yeah. Hey, man. We'll see y'all next week. Holla at your players.
Holla.
Went to a thump.